Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. How's everybody doing out there? My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line, as always, is Jim Ozarski. He just came back from Brooklyn, where the Brooklyn Nets really, really hurt the Milwaukee Bucks. Devastating 2-0 lead in this series. It was a lopsided game two affair on Monday, 125-86. I don't like using the word embarrassing. I think that's too strong, and I still believe that. That is too strong a word. People like to use it. I don't think that was embarrassing because, I mean, I don't think it was nobody gave up. But that was about as bad as a loss as you could have expected from this Milwaukee Bucks team. Jim, I do know where to begin, and that's just to ask you how you doing? What in the world happened while you were out there? What went wrong, Jim?
I immediately reverted back to sitting in the Levi's Stadium press box in the 2019 NFC Championship game where the Packers just got trucked by the San Francisco 49ers, where, you know, you had seen the game before and you're like, oh, it can't be like that again. And then it was, and it was maybe even worse. I mean, JR, there's so much to unpack, and we could go through the couple games and some of those things. But in general, my biggest surprise is not a 2-game deficit, but it's the manner in which it happened. It's the starters getting pulled with 3:40 to go in game one, where in reality they probably could have been yanked earlier than that. And then in game two, Giannis Antetokounmpo does not play the fourth quarter. The rest of the starters are yanked with 9 minutes left. That's, you know, that's bad. I mean, it's the second round of the playoffs and the Bucks are a better team than that. And man, it's just, I don't know what happened to the team that we had seen, not just in the regular season, but the team that had built to this moment, how well they played together at the end of the regular season, how well they played just a week and a half, 2 weeks ago in Miami.
Yeah, if you had said, I think you said this off mic here, if you had said the Bucks are going to be down 2-0 to the Nets, you would have been, you know, you would have understood. They're in Brooklyn. The Nets have three transcendent superstars on the team. You would have to think that the Bucks going down 2-0 is something that was in the cards. And, you know, even now, I don't expect the Bucks to get swept. I even think this series could easily go 6 games. The Bucks have their own transcendent superstar. They can win games. We just saw it against Miami. They did not forget how to play basketball overnight. They are a good team. They were a good team in the playoffs against a team that was better than them last year. They improved, and they're good enough to win games in this series. But like you said, the circumstances are what really are jarring here. The first game is 115-107. We know that wasn't an 8-point game. If we saw it with our own eyes, it was much more lopsided than that. And then in the second game, the deficit grew to, did they even clear 50 points? I kind of tuned out for a while there. I know it was at least like 48-49.
No, they did not get to 50, although the Brooklyn fans were definitely wanting that for sure.
Yeah. I'm going to have you play therapist for me in a minute. I'm going to give you my pessimistic takes, and I'm going to give you my optimistic takes. And you can either talk me off the ledge or tell me to jump. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the course of action will be. But the first place I actually do want to start is with Coach Mike Budenholzer. There were a lot of things that went wrong in this series. Chris Middleton really struggled. Drew Holiday has really struggled. The Nets found defense, which is definitely not something we anticipated. Blake Griffin is, I guess, good again. That came out of left field. But the one thing I'm really struggling with is the kind of the way the rotation was set up, especially in game one, where the big three starters didn't play that many minutes together. James Harden goes out in the first minute with a hamstring pull. At this point, I don't know if we're going to see James Harden at all in this series. obviously, if you're a Bucks fan, you're thinking that's a bummer. Also a huge advantage. The Milwaukee Bucks now maybe have a talent advantage because one of Brooklyn's big three is out. But what we didn't see was, you know, the starters soaking up big minutes to try to sort of go for the throat. Brooklyn was able to get into a rhythm. We know they're good offensively no matter what Milwaukee is going to do defensively. But if you say you're going to hold Brooklyn to 115 points, the door is open for Milwaukee to win. We saw a lot of missed shots, just dreadful three-point shooting, very reminiscent of game one against the Heat. But just not having those starters out there, resting guys in just puzzling ways, is the same thing that we revert back to last year in the bubble. Mike Budenholzer took a lot of criticism for that. I really believed the hot seat was no longer hot after the Heat series. I thought, well, obviously no one's gonna be in a hurry to fire Coach Mike Budenholzer now. And after the first two games of this series, I no longer believe that's the case. I don't know where they go from here. This is the same stuff, same seemingly preventable miscues by not having your best players out there in crunch time. There has to be a master plan that I'm not seeing or considering. But when fans are clamoring for more minutes from their big three, I kind of agree with them. Jim, do you have any insight into the method to the madness here?
Well, it was, well, as for why that was the case in game one, I don't know. I mean, Mike Budenholzer said, of course, fans probably went around the internet that, want to keep guys fresh and whatever. But then, JR, in game two.
And keep guys fresh for what? Like, this is it, guys. They could win the next two series much more easily than this one. Keep guys fresh for what?
Well, right. It was, so I don't quite understand, why that was the initial thought coming out of game one. But you began this, the question, JR, was saying, well, if you hold Brooklyn to 115 points, you probably are in good shape to win, and that would be true. I mean, they're two games that they won in or at Pfizer Forum in May. Was it 114 and 116 for Brooklyn? I mean, that's kind of a sweet spot there. So if they make more threes, does anybody complain about it? Right? Like, because you could argue, well, they did what they were supposed to. They had fresh legs. They were able to run around on defense, all those things. But that's not what happened. So I don't know that, JR. What I will point out, though, in game two, he did not stick to that. The Bucks big three played the same amount of minutes as Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, and the only difference, came in the fourth quarter. Obviously, Giannis started on the bench, Kyrie scored 8 straight points, and then it was done. If the Bucks maybe would have flipped it and scored 10 straight, maybe Giannis enters, right, or comes back in. So he didn't stick to that. To your point of Budenholzer, that they came out in a zone in game two, because why not, right? Like, Brooklyn was just so on fire. And look, the big three put it on themselves after game two, JR. They the three of them said they became too selfish. They tried to do it themselves. They got out of what has made them successful. So I don't know if that's head coach. Like, that's the players, right? So I think that's just, we'll see what happens here in game three.
Yeah, obviously you can't, no coach can just force shots to go in. And for whatever reason, the Bucks weren't able to do that. And it's especially true for Chris Middleton. And I'm a big defender of Chris Middleton. I hate it that he gets so much flack when, it's like, well, he doesn't rise to big moments. And I'm just like, did you not watch other playoff series? Like, what about Boston? Anytime they played Boston, including the series that they won in 2019, like, Chris Middleton had moments where he's the best player on the floor, but he wasn't, no secret, he wasn't at his best. Drew Holiday hasn't been at his best in these two games, but man, I know it's in them, Jim. We just saw it in the Miami series. It wasn't like, I'm not a big believer in the, rest versus rust thing. Like, whatever. Take a week off. You deserve it. Especially this season when you're playing every other night. You need a week off. That's fantastic. Is it all on the Bucks? Are the Nets, are the Nets somehow doing something defensively that is causing them to struggle this much on offense? I find that extraordinarily hard to believe, knowing what we know about the Nets over the course of the season. But I don't know. Is there something that the Nets are throwing at them that we maybe wouldn't have anticipated?
Yeah, they're throwing effort at them. I
Well,
mean,
there you go.
you know, and because that was the thing, right? It was, well, they don't really try that hard, right? You know, but look, Kevin Durant has won two finals MVPs. Kyrie Irving hit a game winner in a finals. And these other guys, you know, they're the other guys. They're the ones there that are supposed to dive around on the floor and try real hard. And look, when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you know, look, they hit Irving on PJ Tucker for a while on defense because Tucker is just going to stand in that corner. So they let Kyrie catch some minutes there, but they're contesting. They're not just letting Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis catch and shoot. You know, they're not building a wall. You know, that's not Brook Lopez down there with Nick Claxton and Blake Griffin, but they're trying. And that sounds ridiculous, I know. However, when you contest shots, that's how Chris Middleton misses layups and Giannis misses layups. That's why, you know, they say that they force shots. That's why even in game two, JR, this stat was floating around quite a bit, how, you know, the Bucks really didn't go to the rim at all in game two.
Yeah, super weird.
They're kind of, yeah, they're kind of settling, you know, just before then. And there's a reason for that. And look, I have to go back to something PJ Tucker said before the series started. And he, you know, because people are like, oh, you know, Brooklyn can't play defense, Bucks can play defense. He said, wait a minute. This is paraphrasing. He's like, in the playoffs, teams who you think do a thing or don't do a thing can change. And he said, we were an example of that in Houston the year they went to the Western Conference Finals. You know, arguably, if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, you know, maybe history's a little different. But he said they were a horrific defensive team during those regular seasons under Mike D'Antoni and Harden. And yet, and look what happened. You know, Brooklyn has come out in two games. And done something that maybe the Bucks weren't anticipating. And I don't think it's a coaching thing. You can't, like, what are you gonna say? Like, you know, all of a sudden the other team is trying really hard. Like, how you can't, like, there's no like coaching adjustment for that. That's a thing that's on the players to adjust to and figure out, you know? So we'll see. Game three, JR, if A, Brooklyn can maintain it, you would think they will because it's been working. So can the Bucks rally with a Fiserv Forum crowd behind them? And look, no team probably knows better that up 2-0 and looking real good doing it does not a series make. You know, the Bucks are gonna have to draw from being on the other end of that, unfortunately.
I've been crunching some, not crunching numbers necessarily, but looking at series in which the teams have gone down 2-0 and come back to win. The obvious example being the finals featuring the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors, where LeBron's team went down 2-0 and 3-1 and rallied back for the win. There's an example here in these very playoffs where the Clippers just beat the Mavericks after going down 2-0 at home. So there are examples out there. Over the course of history, 93% of the teams that go up 2-0 win the series. And in recent history, since 2012, where there have been a few more instances, it's 90%. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, especially, like I said, with the talent that they have. They're in that Cavaliers Warriors series, there was a greater combined deficit between the first two games for Cleveland than it was here for these Bucks. So it's theoretically within reach, but it sure is hard. You know, as I'm sure it was for all these teams, imagining things just turning around, pivoting, and suddenly the Nets maybe not playing quite as hard. With Harden out, I'm sure there are people in Brooklyn, there are some fans of Brooklyn thinking to themselves, oh, maybe it's better that Harden's out. Maybe that creates an environment where either A, Kevin Durant gets to take over more than he normally would. And I don't, I mean, I think Harden is an underrated defensive player. In my mind, you know, he's not a superstar defensive player, but he's a little underrated. But maybe the effort stems from that. Maybe it's more like, well, we've got to step up our game because one of our big guys is off the floor. What do you think it is that has just not enabled them to take advantage of James Harden being out of the game? And I guess much smaller extent, Jeff Green, who I think is a player that would give the Bucks problems, he hasn't been there either. But especially Harden, why is it that that hasn't worked? Has that maybe helped out Brooklyn in some weird way?
Yeah, after game one, you know, Blake Griffin said, unfortunately, they have plenty of experience playing without James Harden. I mean, they played five games against Boston the previous series. They had only eight other games together the previous 72. So
exactly,
they were still figuring each other out. So James Harden goes out on the first offensive play of the game for the Nets. I mean, it probably threw more of a wrench into what the Bucks thought they would be doing in the moment. I mean, you know, the Bucks took advantage. They went on a run. They went up 9 in that first quarter. And then, oh, by the way, you know, Kevin Durant, still Kevin Durant. And I think that's just it. I mean, the knocks on Kyrie Irving and Durant are generally, to me, JR, more social media and off the court driven. I mean,
totally agree.
You know, Irving, maybe you could say he's not the best point guard in basketball because there are some maybe flaws to his game. But when it comes to the playoffs, I mean, Kevin Durant's one of the best postseason performers in NBA history. And he's doing it again. And the Bucks are kind of, I don't know how to take what they say post game. They're like, well, like he's going to do that. And we just got to try to make it harder. And clearly game two, it was a little too easy for Durant. I mean, Irving only had 14 points through three quarters, JR. You would never have thought Brooklyn would be up 30 and Kyrie Irving only has 14 points. Like Durant was just that transcendent. And then the role players, of course, hit shots when they needed to. So I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Jeff Green. That's important, too. I mean, that's like their other guy off the bench, you know, their seventh man, if you will. He's not there. It kind of mitigates the Bucks not having Dante DiVincenzo. I think that has been a problem, as we talked about, we kind of predicted for the Bucks. But, yeah, I think the Nets are comfortable with this rotation. They're comfortable with these lineups. And the Bucks just have now become uncomfortable. I think some of it's their own doing. And I think some of it, of course, as we just said, is the Nets and their effort.
All right, so now I'm going to give you my – these are not takes I actually believe necessarily, but I'm going to give you my extreme optimistic take and my extreme pessimistic take. And you tell me just how far off base I am or where I'm wrong. Here's my optimistic take. Again, this isn't what I believe per se, but here's how one person could look at it. You know what? The Bucks played so poorly in these two games. This is not representative of who they are. They are going to come back at home. They're going to win game three, and they'll do it convincingly. And then game four, maybe they squeak it out, and suddenly it's a 2-2 series. They found whatever it is that was missing. Maybe James Harden tries to come back, but he's, you know, still aching a little bit. In any event, you're probably not going to get Harden back. Maybe Kevin Durant, they figure out a way to slow him down a little bit. This Bucks team still has an MVP. This Bucks team still has three exceptional players sort of running the show. And I just don't believe in Blake Griffin over the course of a series. I don't know if I believe that these guys can maintain this intensity over the course of a series. I think the Bucks can get into this series. I know it looks so bleak after two games. I believe this team can still win even in six games. I mean, that's a little bit of a reach, but I still think this team is capable of winning games in this series. Has anything you've seen, you know, has anything you see tell you otherwise?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, yes, clearly the way they've been beaten is like, wow. Even if there's some improvement, can they make up, you know, getting just totally trounced? If these were close games, like the three during the regular season, you know, for sure I'd be saying, yeah, they could push this to seven, as I thought. I mean, if I had to make a prediction, I don't know if we did that last time, Jared, but I would have said, you know, Nets in seven, just because they're going at home. And the Bucks, I think, can hold serve at five or four. They've done it before. You know, they've beaten the same exact Nets team twice before, twice in a row. You know, there's got to be a little...
Same exact. No Harden in those games. So that's the exact same team. And even then, they had Jeff Green. So, you know, this is comparable
and
for
so,
sure.
Yeah, so you kind of do, like, the DiVincenzo Green thing. I agree with you. And look, I think the big three for the Bucks are very talented. And I think if they're willing to say game two was on them, and perhaps some of game one, I'm curious to see what that looks like then. Like, does Giannis, you know, push the issue into the paint? Now, again, you can't be reckless because the last thing you need is him getting two offensive fouls in the first quarter. But are they back to the ball sharing? And you know those other guys are going to make threes if you just give them that window. They haven't had those windows. So yeah, I think you're not, you know, crazy for thinking the Bucks could hold serve and we're going back to Brooklyn for game five. I you know, if I thought it was going to go seven, I have to still think they can extend it a little bit.
Yeah, and it's not just that series in the finals between LeBron and Golden State. There are other examples where it was really lopsided and team came back and, you know, righted the ship a little bit and were able to win the series. Obviously, there are far more examples of that not happening, so the odds are not in their favor. Here's my ultra-pessimistic take, and again, I really want to stress, this is not what maybe I actually think, but maybe in the deepest, most impulsive parts of my brain here. This is the third year in a row where we've seen this not work out. And it's, you can't lay the blame at the feet of Giannis Antetokounmpo. The guy has been awesome. And he has, in game one, he was the only guy who was awesome, I might point out. The way, though, that he plays, especially as we see this head-to-head comparison with Kevin Durant, the fact of the matter is Giannis can't shoot. He can't shoot at an elite level. He's built up his shooting game as best as he possibly can. He's at least a threat, but he's not a guy like Kevin Durant who can hit from anywhere on the court. He's not a Kobe. He's not a LeBron. He's not one of these guys who is transcendent in that way that he can sort of will teams to win. And we've seen teams find a way to defend him. Is it possible that you just can't build a championship caliber team around a player like that, around a player who's going to make the majority of his hay around the rim and on defense? I mean, I don't want to shortchange what he brings to the table, but the head-to-head comparison with Kevin Durant is unfair, and yet it feels sort of like a talisman that, I mean, Kevin Durant can just be on any team and win the championship. He could decide, not tomorrow, but maybe at the end of the season, I want to play for the Memphis Grizzlies. And the Memphis Grizzlies are instantly a championship caliber team. I feel like that's probably true for Giannis for a lot of teams, but you do have to have the right supporting pieces. Are the Bucks not going to be able to build a championship contender with Giannis?
Well, that's more, I think, of a John Horst question than a Giannis question. Now, criticisms for his play game two, especially, are fair. But again, JR, what I will say is no one seemed to mind when he knocked down a couple threes and some baseline fades, and when he dropped 42 going head to head with Durant back in May, right? No one seemed to care when he did that exact
49, I should point out, 42 for Durant,
right? Yeah, you know, and no one really seemed to care when he scored 30 plus against Miami doing those things either. So, look, they're not going in right now. Obviously, whatever confidence he had at the free throw line has been shaken. He's not getting there that often. Now, in fairness, you know, I think, what, 7 free throws for each team, like, before garbage time? So the refs are letting him play. It's an interesting point because of the way the league is going, JR, but I would say that's not true because it's a two outcome league. It's you score at the basket or you make threes. That's what it is. And that could be a whole other conversation, but there's no other player, not Joel Embiid, not, you know, Nikola Jokic, that is better than Giannis at scoring at the rim or around the basket. So if in that two outcome league, you've got the best guy at one of them. Shoot. I mean, look at Golden State. They got the best guy at the other one. It's just that it just so happens that you're right. Kevin Durant is elite at both. You may not call him the best 3-point shooter. You may not call him the best finisher at the rim, but he's, you know, he can fill it up anywhere else. So you're right in that Durant is that good and varied. But I think from that question, that's what the Bucks tried to do this year with their acquisitions. I think it worked and had worked and up until, you know, game one of the Eastern Conference semis. And, you know, I don't know, JR, this reminds me a lot of that first year of Miami with their big three together. They were just so talented, and LeBron was like Durant, right? Like, they were just, you had that guy. And, you know, Giannis, you're right, isn't that kind of scorer. You know, so the Nets are just doing it right now, and he's feeling it. And you know, I think you can build it. It's just, but that's definitely a John Horst issue, and we can, you know, relitigate some of that stuff if this ends soon. But I think it can be done.
Yeah, and obviously, I'm somewhere in the middle of my optimistic and pessimistic polls there. I don't think the Bucks are going to win this series. I don't think they honestly have much of a prayer. I think they got a little prayer, but I also think that this team could win a championship. I saw someone tweet early in game two. I don't remember who, but you know, paraphrasing it was more like, did we just forget that the Nets were this elite because guys were hurt, weren't healthy, and the regular season is weird, like. You know, maybe the regular season talked us into something other than the obvious outcome that the Nets are by far the best team in the NBA. I mean, that really could be
Right.
what we're dealing with here.
Right. Oh, by the way, they still were the number two seed by like a game with as we said earlier, with their big three playing all of eight contests together. Like, yeah, they're really good. Really good. I don't think they're good enough to win the title. Because I think, you know, if it, especially I think Utah and Phoenix, as teams, you know, can just move it, and they don't have the individuals that the Bucks have, where you can kind of get bogged down, if you will, in the kind of one-to-one stuff. Yeah, no, Brooklyn is, it's possible that that was forgotten, at least amongst Bucks fans. But there's a reason the Nets had home court. There's a reason they were favored to win the series anyway. It's just, I don't think anyone thought there was this level of disparity when you look at the point differential.
Here are the things, if I'm a diehard Bucks fan at this point, that I'd be really upset about. One is something I've talked about before. That loss on late April against the Rockets' last place team. Again, if they win that game, then they go all out in the last game of the year against Chicago. They probably win that one too. And then the Bucks are the two seed, and the series starts at Pfizer Forum. That was a missed opportunity. You know, you need every advantage against a team as good as the Nets. Harden going out was one of those advantages, but having those games, I think, start in Milwaukee would have been just a different dynamic. I don't know if that results in anything different, but it certainly would have been preferable to what they have now. I would be looking back at 2019, seeing that series where they were up 2-0 on the Raptors. There were no super teams in the way. It was absolutely open for them to, you know, Durant gets hurt. There's absolutely an opportunity to win the whole thing. And Kawhi leads his, you know, leads his comeback and ends up winning the whole thing. I mean, good on Kawhi. That was his moment, but that felt like maybe the Bucks' moment. You know, really would be it. And I tell you what, I would not want the Phoenix Suns to win this NBA title because that is a team that started further back from the pack than the Bucks were. The Bucks were ahead of the Suns for a long time. The Suns got Chris Paul, a guy who a lot of Bucks fans wanted here too. I mean, a guy who would have fit. He was a veteran. It didn't make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. And Holiday, I think, still debatably is the sort of the better outcome there. But Chris Paul's been very, you know, is what he is. He's sensational, future Hall of Famer, and all that. And if they win with Devin Booker, it's going to be really frustrating that the Milwaukee Bucks weren't able to take that leap from a smaller-ish market, or at least a market outside the, you know, the big spheres, the big coastal cities, and win an NBA title. It'd be like, why couldn't the Bucks do that? You know, like that would be. I think the Nets are going to win this series, and I think they're going to win the NBA title. I think this is something that keeps up. I mean, if freaking Brook Lopez, if that or not Brook Lopez, my bad, Blake Griffin, if Blake Griffin can be this level. I don't know what stops Brooklyn from winning the whole thing. I mean, Milwaukee is a sensational team, and they have been obliterated in these first two games. I don't think anybody can stop them, honestly.
Yeah, I think, well, I guess for me, you know, Utah is special, the way they move the ball, the way
Sure,
they
yeah.
share it, the way they score, and yeah, I mean, Phoenix too. And look, what's a common denominator? Both of those guys have sort of the young bigs. I mean, Rudy Gobert's more veteran than DeAndre Ayton, but you know, you've got probably more athletic rim protectors than Brook Lopez. I think Lopez, you know, is still up there in terms of what he can do defensively there. And look, they scored it. They score differently than the Bucks do. To your point about Giannis being such an elite sort of inside guy, that as teams, though, they can just fill it up far better than the Bucks. Like, the Bucks 3-point shooters are their role players. like Donovan Mitchell's not a role player, you know. Devin Booker's not a role player. Like, their better players are the ones who can really fill it up. And that you know, and you started this, JR, kind of talking about, you know, the kind of the hate Chris Middleton gets. And I will say, that's, look, that guy has to, he has to make his shots, you know. That, I mean, that's why he's there. And so when he's struggling, that just compresses everything, you know. And so, you know, he's got to make those. And it's, he's not a volume 3-point shooter. He's not a guy who's putting up 10, 11 threes. You know, he's got to go 3 for 6, 3 for 7, you know, and get around the basket, because he's good at that too, that mid-range Chris. You know, and that's just, you know, the Bucks are good at what they do. But you're right, I think in this instance so far, you know, the Nets are just better at what they do.
To close down the conversation and bring it back to Budenholzer, if he, part of me would be really dismayed to see him let go, because they've made all these strides this season. They've really worked on all the things that perceivably were not good enough as a playoff team last year. Aren't they going to be starting over from scratch if they bring in any new coach, let alone, you know, set aside, are they actually going to be able to find a coach who fits everything and who is available to be the next head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks? Like, I just feel like that's waving a white flag to a degree and saying, yeah, maybe we need longer, you know, a totally different approach. That's not going to happen overnight. This team isn't going anywhere. The big three are here for a while. So if they have to build everything back up again, I mean, that's not a 1-year process. So that's part of what I'm a little concerned about, and what I think some people might be missing when you hear people clamoring for a new head coach. Like, I just don't know if there's no instant solution here. And that's why I ask about Giannis, this team winning with Giannis. That is the main ingredient. That will always be the key ingredient to a championship run. And I don't know if any coach can come in and serve Giannis differently than how Budenholzer has.
Yeah, it's look. The extensions kick in next year. So the big three are going to account for $500 million worth of new money.
Yes.
You know, they're in the luxury tax. And the Bucks won at an incredible rate, a 71.4% regular season winning percentage. JR, they won 46 games this year. And how many times did, you know, Bucks fans go nuts because they weren't winning, you know, what would be the mathematical equivalent of 55 games. So what I'm saying is you're right. Who's next would have to be a special coach in two ways. One, it'd have to be a B2C championship coach, which did anyone know Nick Nurse was that guy? So I'm not going to say it has to be someone who's been there before. They would just have to know that, like, okay, you're the next Nick Nurse, or you're the next Eric Spoelstra, right? Like the guys who maybe at the time you didn't think could be that good. So there's that. But then there's, oh, by the way, you can win 70% of your games and still be the fall guy. That's really hard. Mike Brown knows what that's like. You know, that might not be a name that's very sexy for Bucks fans, but, you know, that's a guy who was with LeBron in Cleveland. They went to a finals and lost, and, you know, then he was gone. You know, so it's going to be a, if Mike Budenholzer is, you know, removed from his position, it would have to be, if not the most attractive job in basketball, open job, it would be 1A behind, I guess, Boston. That's really the only other opening that's, you know, one could even think of. But again, that's a lot there. And you're right. It is a who's next. This isn't it. You know, for Wisconsin fans, JR, like, this isn't Mike McCarthy in that you knew the time was up, right? You knew it was over. This, I don't know. It's just year three of a 4-year deal. Can you bring him back as a lame duck? Do best NFL coaches don't like that. Do basketball coaches care? I don't know. You know, does that matter? You know, what about year two of this group where you're not COVID testing twice a day, every day, when you can actually practice, when you can have shooter? I don't know. That's what's so interesting about the ownership part of this, JR. Like, if you're that upset, you can fire the coach. That's the easiest thing for an ownership group to do, because you can't get rid of $500 million worth of the guys you just signed. Or do you take the level-headed approach, take the offseason bullets from, you know, some national pundits in your fan base and say, look, we have been too good. You know, he deserves another chance to run it back. And then, you know, you see where you're at the end of the next year. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's tough because it's hard. You can be upset about the losses the last 2 years in the playoffs, but this would have been an underdog success story if they had come out and, you know, taken to the Nets. Like, that wasn't supposed to happen at this point. So, and it still may, but that would be even more improbable at this point. The Nets are just too good a team, and it's hard to, you know, you've already baked in these last 2 years, which is why people are talking about this. But on the surface, if we just looked at 2021, this would not be a reason to fire a guy. This would not be a punishable offense, losing to this Brooklyn team. Any last thoughts before I let you go, Jim?
You know, look, they've got a couple days off to regroup here. You know, I understand if they lose game three, what we'll hear post game. They need to win game three.
Yes.
I don't know if you know, if it's as simple as what the big three said, which is just ball sharing. I think some of it is they've got to kind of pull their head out of it a little bit. And there's got to be, you know, why is Blake Griffin the one coming up with the 50-50 balls? Why is, I'm not saying start fights or anything, but why is Mamadi Diakite the one, you know, being
showing some heart
presence when you're down 50? Same thing with Thanasis. Like, that's not, look, that, and don't misconstrue that. You don't need your starters, like, having hard fouls and being dumb.
Right.
But I think people listening to this know what I mean. Like, I think there's, Giannis is a nasty player. I don't know if I've seen that through two games. And I think that kind of needs to come out a little bit in game three to kind of set a tone. And then maybe that opens up some space in there for Middleton and Jrue Holiday to get it going as well.
He is Jim Ozarski. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Game three at Pfizer Forum. That is Thursday night against the Brooklyn Nets, 6:30 p.m. tip. Milwaukee desperately needs a win to get back into the series, save the season. And game four will be, is that Monday, I believe? Yes, Monday in the afternoon. No, Sunday afternoon, correct?
Yeah, so game three is Thursday, and game four is, yes, indeed, Sunday the 13th as a matinee. So, you know, plenty of days off in between to get themselves right.
Hopefully the next podcast we do here, the Point Forward Podcast, will not be a post-mortem. It will be looking ahead to what's left of this series with the Nets. We'll be coming back at you again next week. Thanks for joining me, Jim. We'll talk to you again then. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. You can find me at JR Radcliffe, or you can find Jim at Jim Ozarski on Twitter. Let us know there as well. Thanks for tuning into the Point Forward Podcast. We will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.